So when do you pivot an idea? When do you pivot your business from the thing that you're currently focusing on to a better path? Well, we're going to be talking about that in this episode of the Carrot Cast. And I've got a guest on with me. He's a Carrot customer out of San Diego, Gary Horton. And Gary has gone through that exact decision this past year. Okay, he was flipping houses. He was wholesaling. He also has his real estate agent's license. But he hit some roadblocks. He hit a wall in his market. And the market's really competitive, like we're going to be talking. You're going to listen to our conversation around his journey, around his pivot, and how he went from basically really struggling to get past his first several big deals. His first deal was a big deal. So it lit him up. You know, he was on fire. And then it got harder. And we all have that decision. When things get hard, do we continue on the current path and just keep on pushing, keep on pushing, keep on pushing, or do we pivot? Is there a better path for us if we just turn a little bit to the right or a little bit to the left? Well, Gary made that pivot, and now he's investing in a different type of real estate. He's really scaling that business up now, doing 8-9 deals a month when he was struggling to get a couple in a competitive market. He's still in crazy competitive markets, but the thing is, guys and gals, the way he's currently doing his real estate investing now, he has very little competition in the same markets. So what is Gary doing? Also, we whip out some real stats. So Gary is using both direct mail, and he's going to walk you through exactly what he's doing on his direct mail pieces for these exact types of properties and sellers. And we're going to show you what he's doing on his online marketing and walk through the numbers that he's got. And the numbers are insane. So if you're looking to try to find how you can find a motivated seller of real estate for under $26 per deal, not per lead, per deal, in paid advertising, Google pay-per-click, what he's pulling right now is every deal he closes only costs about $26 in ad costs in pay-per-click. So you guys are probably curious, what is it that Gary's doing? What's his business model? What type of real estate? What's his marketing? And you guys are going to hear it all on this episode of the Carrot Cast. So I'm going to welcome on in Gary Horton here in a second. But before I do, if you guys are enjoying the Carrot Cast, I know I'm enjoying putting these together. If you're enjoying the Carrot Cast, head over to iTunes, give us a rating, give us a review. I want to see us get up over the 50 five-star reviews mark here shortly. And when we do, we'll throw a little party and we'll send the person who's the 50th review something cool in the mail. But also, guys, every single person who puts in a review there, it just kind of puts this magical good vibe out in the world. Okay. And I know it helps us make sure we're doing the things that we want to be doing, that we're doing right, good and bad reviews. And also we just really, really, really love that feedback from you. Okay. So go to iTunes, subscribe to us on iTunes, get every episode 1 to 2 weeks early before we put out on our blog. And let's talk to Gary. Hey, everybody, welcome to this episode of the Carrot Cast. And I've got an awesome guest on today, and I'll introduce you guys to Gary here in a second. But Gary and I first connected in person, it was this past January down in San Diego where you live. We were at an event, which we don't go to too many events at all, but one of the things that we love to do is whenever we go to an event, we email all of our customers in that area and we try to put together some sort of a dinner and get together for drinks or whatever. And Gary showed up and we just had an amazing conversation. We chatted for a long time. It seemed like we have a lot in common, around the same age. Kids are about the same ages, you know, things like that. So, I think we really hit it off, but dude, I really love the combo around your business model. And we're going to be talking about that business model today, of course, on how you're buying land, selling land, why you switch from wholesaling and flipping to doing that in your market. And we're just going to dive into everything about it, how you're doing it, what's working, what's not, all kinds of stuff. But welcome on this episode of the Carrot Cast, Gary.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Trevor. I'm excited to be on. I'm really excited to drop some good knowledge and share a lot about the business, and definitely really enjoyed meeting you and your team in person there in San Diego. And I felt like you've always had a really good connection with your customers, and you got your thumb on what they're doing. And so kind of getting to meet you in person and see the way your team and everyone interacts, it was really cool. You could just feel that culture, and it was a lot of fun.
Cool, man. Dude, you got to make business fun, you know, and that to me, you know, connecting with your customers is one of my favorite things, but it's one of the things that we don't get to do very often because we're up here in Oregon.
We don't go to a whole lot of events. We're not on the webinar circuit, and we're not doing all that kind of stuff. And so it's something we really, really enjoy. And it's kind of funny, dude. The only customer that we've ever had local to where we are, it's just one guy, a young guy. He came and signed up in our offices, and he walked in the door, and we're like, he goes, yeah, so I heard about you guys. I'm actually using your competitor, but wasn't getting results and heard great things about you guys. How do I sign up? And we all looked at each other because this is the first time anyone's ever came in our doors asking how to sign up. And so
yeah, you're like, you're going to have to go online here and sign up.
That's what we did. I brought him into my office and like, all right, here's my computer. Just go right here. And he signed up. But the funny thing is, the reason I bring it up is because he's also a land investor. And so we're going to be talking about land today and how you made that switch. And dude, before we do, why don't you give people some perspective on who you are, where you're living, kind of what phase in life that you're in right now, family wise, business wise, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'd love to. So I grew up in San Diego. Kind of took the traditional path, you know, went to college, got a job, and kind of was doing the project management, estimating, worked for, you know, utility contractor, solar contractor. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of used to, you know, projects and getting things done, but I always had a bug for real estate investing, even probably high school days, or just always kind of saw that as what I would want to do. Mm-hmm. But I was never really doing it. So I was at a point where I was married, had our first boy, and then we just had boy girl twins.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, got three little ones under three. And at the time, I'm just doing a job I don't love. I don't want to be doing it at all. Mm-hmm. I don't see any future in it. And I'm just getting into a lot of podcasts and listening to a lot of stuff about, you know, a lot of wholesaling stuff. And I just kind of felt like, man, I just need to break free. I can, you know, I'll wholesale. And, you know, we had an opportunity to sell our house, move back down to San Diego. We were just a little bit north of San Diego, and that would kind of be kind of the buffer or create that escape. So that's what we did is we sold our house, I quit my job, started kind of wholesaling full time, had my real estate license to kind of do some realtor business too, and just kind of went for it. And, you know, it was definitely... You know, I think you get excited and expect a lot of yourself.
Yeah.
And so you expect it to be great, but it was tough.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had a really good deal to start out the gates and then just found San Diego being super competitive. And, you know, it was a grind to get deals and to keep them. And, just felt like it was tough to get that momentum and really good deal flow.
Dude, I want to kind of roll back here a little bit and unpack that phase of your life because, dude, to me, one of the reasons I love working with entrepreneurs, I love talking with entrepreneurs, one of the reasons I do this podcast is I really love what makes people tick, you know, and I see it every day because we work with thousands of real estate investors and agents. And, we see it every day where there's certain people who just for some reason can't succeed or they can, but they're not letting themselves succeed. They don't. And then there's people who they look like that same person. They have all the same resources. They have everything that person has, except for they succeed. And I love kind of finding the differences there. So you're crushing it today. And you mentioned, you know, that you got that first deal done. When was it that you decided to leave the job? Like what year? And then when did you get the first deal done? How long were you working to get that first deal done?
So it was, I think, the end of 2014. I kind of remember it being, you know, Thanksgiving time or like Christmas, you know, kind of around the holidays mm-hmm. like that. And then probably February of 2015, I did a real good wholesale deal. You know, I had a mentor, talked at a few clubs thinking, man, I'm on my way. Mm-hmm. This is going to be great. You know, I'm San Diego guy, how fun it'll be to be supplying great deals, to people, you know, and they're flipping houses and maybe I'll be flipping some. And then you just, it kind of sets in where, you know, you're sending out a lot of mailers or getting a lot of leads, but there's just a lot of competition. And for me, I guess maybe I just couldn't find either the competitive advantage or a way to where when there's multiple people in on a deal, I did well, you know, with the trust factor and that it seemed to be likable, but you know, either the price or just someone else being able to talk a little bit better and probably just confidence in doing deals. So mm-hmm. when you haven't done too many, sometimes the difference isn't that much. So it's hard to see. But there's just a certain difference in the way things are presented, I think, once you have that experience and confidence in closing deals.
Yeah, that's a good point. I did a podcast, I think it was about a month or two ago, called What's Your Credibility Score? And in a cluttered market like we're in now, where anytime a market is hot, like San Diego, you know, you've got a lot of investors who want to pile in there and be a flipper or wholesaler or just buying properties to rent out. You've got a lot of people who want to be a real estate agent all of a sudden because it's easier to sell a house and get a commission than it was 5 years ago. And so in that kind of market, which you experience that, the competition is really high. So there's all these little things that we need to be doing as businesses to then inch up our credibility factor. And like you mentioned, sometimes it's almost immeasurable, but there's something there. It's a feeling the seller or buyer gets. It's, you know, these little credibility badges. It's your Better Business Bureau. This person had 25 A-plus things. This other person didn't have any on their website. And they're like, well, shoot, you know, those five reviews on there, they sold me. So there's a lot of little things in there that could trip someone up, especially a newer investor or an investor who hasn't really built that credibility profile.
Yeah. And it really is. I think there's a way where when you're confident with whatever it is, if you expect the result, you're not hoping for it. You just kind of expect it. So there's a way you can say, hey, here's what we're going to do. And you can just lead. Mm. And I think when you're starting out or just your confidence, you're just not sure what to do and you're okay, I'll get back to you on things. And I think that's picked up on where people like someone that's confident and seems to know what they're doing that works. So I think that's a big factor.
Dude, I want to come back to that a little bit later because you're doing really well on the land side. And I want to kind of see how things have changed there. Cause we're going to be telling the story now on how you picked up land, why you chose to pivot your business. But also I want to see if your mindset's changed and that kind of stuff. And if it's helping you close more deals. So you close that first big deal. You're on a high. You're like, man, this is going to be easy.
Yeah, totally.
It happened quickly. And you're probably just adding up all the dollars in your mind going, man, if it was this easy to get this one, I'd do one of these a month or two of these a month or whatever.
Yeah.
So where did you kind of hit that blocking point where you just realized like, man, this is not working for me for some reason. And what were you doing? Did you ever think about quitting or were you always looking at pivoting to something else?
Yeah. That's the tough part is I think, you know, to make a leap of faith or to bet on yourself to just do something is you have some level of confidence and belief in yourself that you can do it, that you're not going to give up, and you know that if you never quit, you won't fail and those things. So you're kind of always pumping yourself up to keep going. But I think for me, there came a point where I just felt like that, you know, it was. I mean, it didn't take too long where it just felt like, man, okay, I think that first deal was just kind of a good one and came a little bit too easy. Mm. And I just started noticing with sellers or things, just, man, I keep being told I'm, you know, either too low. And of course, as a wholesaler, you have to get even a little bit better deal.
Yeah.
So, you know, the flipper wants it. So then you're a little bit at a competitive disadvantage because if you're right there next to a flipper who's really going to buy it, you have to get a better deal than him because that's someone maybe you would want to flip it to. Mm-hmm. So I think I noticed that and I thought, what if I could put together a more competitive and a better option that rather than try to focus on getting a good deal, if I could focus on helping out the seller. So, I mean, in my mind, it's you want to improve and if you're not getting the results, I don't have a lot of patience. So it didn't take too long to where I just thought maybe months. I kept wholesaling, but I just thought maybe I need another option. So there's a company in town. I think they're National Renovation Realty, and they offer a model. Well, hey, we'll come in, you know, no money out of pocket to you. We'll renovate your house and sell it for you, and you know, cut out the flipper, and you get that top dollar and make that extra, you know, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 or whatever it is.
I get you.
So, I thought, hey, this is great. I can offer this. If it's me and a wholesaler, you know, the wholesaler is trying to get a good deal on the property. I'm trying to help the seller make the most money possible. I believe in this better. So I did a kind of a mini pivot to that, but that never really caught fire either. And I think part of it is just, I know you use it like that Colby index and I've done that myself on your recommendation. And it's, you know, when you're good at quick start and lots of ideas, but you're not good at follow through and really implementing those, it's not the lack of ideas, but maybe just really, you know, I hadn't read Grant Cardone's 10X Rule. I wasn't operating, taking that kind of action. And so you just get these ideas and you put out a little bit of stuff, but most things, when you do that, it doesn't just really take off. You know, you need to push harder. So I think that was, when I look back on it, I think if I, you know, I would have been more successful with wholesaling or whatever I was doing if I had, you know, a little bit different mentality in that way too.
Dude, so on the Colby score, and for those of you who are listening to this, if you guys have not listened to my episode, I think it's just called the Colby score or something like that. But it's four or five episodes back where I talk about how we hire people, how we have everyone take this one. I guess you could call it a personality test called the Colby score. Dude, so what are you?
I'm a 5.573.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Sweet. So I'm really similar on. So for people that are listening, 5.573. So five is like, fact finder, the first one. So how do you kind of research before you do stuff and things like that? So it looks like you do a little bit of research and then you do it. You're not searching too long. You're not overburdening yourself with looking for stuff. The second one's follow through. So you got to have checklists.
I was surprised at that one. I was thinking, I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, cause I feel like that part of it's where it's just the implementing or doing that. I feel like that's at times the bottleneck or what's like that.
Totally. Yeah. So follow through is implement and getting things done. You don't want to have a bunch of things halfway done. You know, if you're a high follow through, you'd like to finish some checklists. You probably get a little antsy if things aren't like in a checklist format and getting them done. And then quick start is ideas, visionary. You're comfortable with a bunch of things kind of going on. You're comfortable moving between things. You probably have four books that are not read on your nightstand. Yeah. You've started a project or five projects and don't finish them, that kind of thing. And that's straight at me too. I think I'm a 6.28 and then something else. I think a 4 or something, the last one, but being a 2 on follow through and then an 8 on quick start, you can only imagine what happens there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I don't want to dive into that too long, but that's one thing I would highly suggest you guys go listen to that episode of the Carrot Cast. So just go to carrotcast.com and find that one on the Colby score. If you're struggling getting things done, moving your business forward, working in your unique ability, definitely need to listen to that one. So dude, so at that point you had tried out this new model. It just wasn't getting implemented well for whatever reason, wasn't getting traction. So what'd you do next, man? Like how did you find land and why'd you make that pivot?
Yeah, and you touched on too, thinking about quitting or those things. And I guess the funny thing is there's a certain point where I think that's not an option anymore. Like there's no going back. Yep. So I think you just know, you know, whatever it takes, you're going to do it, you know? And, but it's that's the fine line between just continuing what you're doing or just like, well, I have to do something. Let me try to find something a little bit better.
Yeah.
So for me, I was listening to a podcast and they were talking about land investing and flipping land, you know, and real inexpensive land. And it really resonated with me. I remember looking at cheap land many, many years ago. There's this guy, Billy Land. I think he's up in Oregon and he's been at it 30 plus years. And just, I mean, I'd seen him on eBay in the 90s and just, you know, like, yeah, I remember seeing cheap land. So, and the way they were talking about the business is you could just tell it wasn't that competitive. There wasn't a lot of people doing it. They were talking about response rates they were getting from mailings and certain things. And I could just tell, hey, this sounds like there's a lot of room in here. And I'm like, I want deals. And it's, you know, there's a certain confidence and something you get when you do a deal and you get a win. So I started just real, real slow, just, okay, I'll mail a little bit, put up some online ads and a few things for getting land. And the response rate compared to anything else I had done was great. So I, you know, bought one piece of land, flipped that. It was, you know, a pretty good experience, a small deal, but just nice to get a win, not too involved. Everything, you know, you buy it, record it in your name, you're selling it as the owner. It's, you know, it's a real, not a lot of paperwork involved, and you just have control and decision making. So then I did a couple more deals and I think I liked it and I kept doing a little bit, but I was having a hard time switching again because I just felt like, man, I kind of told everyone I'm I'm buying houses and I'm, you know, wholesaling, and then I'm kind of doing more noble renovating Lister house, and I'm, you know, really a realtor now. And then to be like, well, hey, I buy land, you know, I just felt like, you know, like I was struggling with that identity part for sure. Yeah. But I did like land, and I think I thought, hey, if I could find someone to help out with, you know, the admin, a lot of the stuff, I think I could keep doing what I'm doing and then do the land on the side. Mm. Was kind of my initial thinking. So I kind of ramped up. This would be maybe like April, May of just last year.
Okay.
And that's when I kind of started, okay, let's get some more mailings out. Let's, you know, get a website up, you know, and let's kind of really grow this thing and get someone in. And it didn't work out to hire anyone, but I was left with a lot of business. And I started, you know, kind of doing more deals and a couple deals in a month or more, and just felt like, no, I just like this. It fits.
Yeah.
It's a virtual business. You're not going and looking at the property or, you know, doing any development or permitting or subdividing, or there's really no value add other than just kind of getting it at a good price and doing a great, you know, marketing ad and whatnot and making it really affordable and those things. So you could just tell, man, there's, if a market would give you such a good reaction, there must be a lot of growth to it, because otherwise you wouldn't be able to get so many people. You know, you could tell people they're not contacted all the time. If you're an absentee owner, which everyone who owns vacant land would be an absentee owner, you're not getting stacks of letters and postcards and yellow letters and things, because it's not as common as something like wholesaling. It just is, you know, a lot more competitive and common now. So I think that was the encouraging part, where I just felt like, you know, I love the wins. I love making these deals. I love the control I have and the speediness of it, where there's deals where you had some where you're selling them as soon as you get them kind of thing. And it was really fun. But if you have to hold them for a little while, it wasn't like a stressful hold. There's no carrying costs. When you buy a lot for $1,000, you bought it, you own it, and that's that. I mean, property taxes are so cheap.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when it kind of hit me that, hey, I like land business. And I'm just gonna do it and make it a little bit more of a focus. And so I kept focusing more on it. And then now our company is Property Investment Engineers, and we sell our land website's Left Coast Land. And that's mainly, I still do some realtor business, but that's mainly what we're doing. And I mean, I just love it.
Dude, that to me is so cool. And I wanna kind of dive into one part of that story here in a bit before we talk about your business model. We're gonna talk about, you know, what you're doing to find sellers, kind of how the deals look and things like that. But dude, one of the thinking through some really successful companies, right? You look at Apple, you look at some insanely successful companies out there in the world. And a lot of people, they kind of fear the pivot. They fear that, going, man, am I giving up? Am I failing on this other thing? Is that admitting failure on it? I mean, shoot, you look at Apple Computer once again. So going back to their history, when Jobs first launched the thing, they were really successful. And then they went through this really unsuccessful period. Then he came back and they had something like 100 or 200 product SKUs. And he came back in and cut it down to like 8 or 9. And he's like, we're fundamentally changing the way we're doing our business. And they went from being just a computer company to being this personal computing device company. And they really pivoted. There's a lot of other examples like that, where you can look at these companies that went in there and completely had to pivot their business model, but they wouldn't have survived without the pivot. And it's so cool that you were able to recognize, you know what? Yes, I do see other people succeeding at wholesaling and house flipping. I see that. And I think if I push it hard enough, and I'm sure I can crack through eventually. But that question is, how long do I need to push it? How long am I willing to push it? And is there a path of least resistance that helps me get what I'm looking to get that's not there? Maybe I just need to look left when I'm looking right. And that was a big deal, dude. And it sounds like it was kind of natural for you, because like you said, your mindset was, I'm going to make it work. There's no other option.
Yeah. I mean, I've been married. We just had our 11th anniversary, three little kids, you know, I'm supporting them. So, you know, yeah, there's no option, but to figure out something and make it work. But that is the tough part, is where, you know, I'm going to investment clubs and other people that are wholesaling, you know, and there's just something about cracking that code or getting something once you get it. you know, that I think it's the confidence level and the way you go about it, and you kind of find your way in it. But, and then part of it too is sometimes you see, well, hey, even once I do practice code, what will that look like for me? And sometimes it's maybe a little bit more tougher or demanding or not quite what you want. And I think for me, you know, the family's the drive. So you want that freedom. You want to be able to either live life on your own terms or be able to work on vacation or go places or, you know, not have to ask permission to do things like that. But there's also the responsibility and demands that come with that too.
Yeah. I love it. So for a lot of people out there listening to this, if you've been pushing the wholesaling or flipping business for a good amount of time, I'm not talking a couple months, I'm not talking 3 months or 4 months. And if you've only been doing it for that amount of time, you probably haven't given it the good try if it's been for a few months. But let's say you've been doing it, you've got some deals done, but you're just really hitting a rock wall because your market's just crazy, crazy competitive. Looking at land, I want to kind of unpack your model here a bit. And you're using Carrot, of course, as a part of your lead generation. You're selling your land on your Carrot Land website. You're generating seller leads of land on there. And let's kind of start from the start, dude. So you got that first deal done. You said it was a small deal. To put things into perspective, what is a small deal and what is like a really, really big deal with land that you're buying and selling?
Yeah, so I would say, I mean, if you play Monopoly, we're talking Baltic and Mediterranean for sure.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the funny part is the vacant land niche. It's, I think it's in some ways, maybe it's kind of all vacant land, but the niche is really the rural vacant land. That's extremely, extremely cheap and kind of will always be, you know, down like that. I mean, there's some lots that are in the path of growth or certain things, but I'm not talking like, you know, high-end commercial lots. And there's a lot of different vacant land that you can probably still get really good deals on because it's a funny commodity like that. But so the first deal, the first property lot I bought was $500. And when you talk about, you know, spending money on a mailing or certain things, $500 to actually buy land, it just seemed like it wasn't even real money.
Yeah.
And where's the, you know, the risk is worst case, I own some lot out up in the forest or in the mountains that I can't sell or whatever. I only paid $500. It wasn't really a big risk at all.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that's really awesome is the barrier to entry of the land is that low. I mean, there's lots of people buying land under $1,000, hundreds of dollars, and, you know, maybe they're not huge deals, but the fact that you can actually buy and own land is crazy. So when I'm talking to people, you just don't meet a lot of people when you're sharing the numbers with, and they're just like, what? You can buy land for hundreds of dollars or a couple thousand bucks or, you know, buy 20 or 40 acres and, you know, you get a really good deal on it. And it's just like, people just, they can't even compute that you can buy land that cheap. So, I mean, yeah, maybe $1,500 is kind of a sweet spot-ish, but yeah, there's a lot of really small deals. And I know we'll get into it, but on the selling side, you know, some deals you sell for cash and some deals you sell seller financing to create kind of a passive income and carry back the note. And that's a really popular way for buyers. They like that as well. So on the smaller deals, those are really, really premium to do the seller financing with because you're not out of pocket very much on the acquisition. A lot of times you have your money back maybe on the down or on the down payment in a couple of months. It's so quick, and then you're just building that cash flow and your money's back right away. So those small deals, they're great for that, and people like to buy them. They're getting a good deal too, so it works out for everybody.
What's the most you've ever paid for a piece of land?
Yeah, so the most would be maybe just under $7,000.
Okay.
So, you know, pretty low. There is a little niche of wholesaling land, which I've had properties, you know, in the $200,000-$300,000 range under contract looking to wholesale. But I found those to be a little bit tougher. And I think the main thing is you can wholesale high-end land, but you need to really have the buyers first and be connected that way. These were just deals that came through the website, and it was like, oh, this lot in Half Moon Bay or this 600 acre lot in Arizona, or things that just, you know, I never normally would have either mailed for or seen. and they just fall into your a web form, and you're like, oh, okay, like this is an amazing lot, and you know, and so cool opportunities like that. And I'm sure I'll get, I can see getting a couple like fatties, like big wholesale deals a year with land. And I'm going to be doing that in San Diego, where, you know, I'm connected with builders and things, to where we're working backwards and finding them good land deals. But the sweet spot really is the low price. That's where it's, you know, it's easier to buy, it's, and easier to sell. So that's kind of the main thing, is it's, you could buy a lot for 20 grand and try to sell it for 40 or 60 grand, but it's a lot harder to sell that property because it's got to check all the boxes and really be good and usable at that price.
Yep. That's perfect. So, so those types of sellers who are selling this land, like you said, a lot of people kind of go, man, how is it possible you could buy land for that cheap? So to kind of dispel that myth a little bit, what kinds of situations are these sellers going through? Like, why are they selling the land for that cheap?
Yeah. So I'd say probably whatever real estate investing you're doing, you know, there's a certain either motivated seller or someone who just doesn't want the property. You know, we've all been there with something, whether it's it's a car or something, you're just like, I don't want it anymore. I want it out of my life. I just want to sell it. I don't think it's usually that, you know, that passionate, because you don't really have a lot of emotional connection with vacant land. Most of the time, most sellers, it's not like it's like a house, or they grew up in the house, or that, you know, it's just, you know, a vacant lot that they probably don't really go to or use or see, or maybe they've never seen. But there's two real ways. So the direct mail, what I do is, you know, we take it from a, like a reverse engineering, where we find out what area we want to be in, and you look at the market and figure out what lots are selling for, kind of certain sizes, segments, and kind of create a little bit of a, like your own like pricing. And then you pull that list, either, you know, I would recommend using a title company, just because, you know, delinquent, you don't need delinquent taxes. You know, that's good, but sometimes those are a lot of problem properties too. I think anyone who owns vacant land is a good candidate to sell it below market, including us. Like we sell good deals. So we try to sell our land way below market. And sometimes it's still like, we do a lot of good marketing and it still like takes a little bit. So that's where anyone who owns land is a good candidate to sell it for a good deal. But the key is on the direct mail is we mail offers. So when someone opens the mail, they open it up and it's a 2-page cover letter or 2-page offer cover letter, that just a little intro. And then there's an actual land purchase agreement. And I think what the beauty of that is, it cuts out a really high percentage of people that are calling that aren't going to be a deal. So I've had mailers where you don't get a huge feedback, but the ones that you do, it's like, you know, most of them are just deals. So it's a real nice way of, you know, sometimes you get a few calls, hey, this is way too low, or, you know, they're a little bit irritated. And usually that's because they bought it for way too much and they're just annoyed. They're being reminded that it's, you know, it was a bad buy or something. But that's nice because you control the price. You control how many you're sending out, what area you're getting the deals in. And it is a key as you build your buyer's list to kind of have people looking and land in similar areas. So the direct mail works really well for that. And then a really nice site component is I have an awesome seller lead site with you guys. And I had to shrink it down. We started like, you know, we buy land in all 50 states. Because you go on land websites and you see people that have land everywhere in every state and it looks really cool. So I thought, okay, well, it's, you know, it's not that big of a difference or different process. So we started doing that and realized it's too hard to sell these onesie twosie lots in another state that we don't deal in and aren't used to, and building a buyer's list and you're going to repeat. So now the list, now that website just says California, but I mean, it works so good. We do a very, very small Google AdWord, you know, pay-per-click campaign, and it just trickles in these leads. You know, I tried it for houses, and it was, you know, I don't know what I'm really doing. It's not a strength, and it's not something I've hired out. So but it just works, I think, because it's land. But it works. People go on, they put in their APN, they give me their email and phone number, and they, you know, here's the land I want to sell. So the website leads are awesome because you never know what you're going to get. I'll get expensive commercial lots. I'll get such a huge variety that some of those I've gotten to learn just, hey, we need to be pretty quick at not chasing the deals that we're not going to be able to do. And I had to get over a guilt factor of feeling like, man, on my website, I say I'll make them an offer and then they submit their info. I feel bad just saying, no, we don't. It's not what we're looking for. I don't know. Yeah. I struggled with that a little bit, but just kind of realized, you know, it's too reactionary and we can't just be taking this time to look at a new area for the first time each time and then try to figure out the market just for one deal we're going to make an offer on. But what's been great is I had a really good deal that was in a town that's in San Diego. It's the closest property I've ever flipped to me. And it came on a website. It came on an online lead. And that was, I think, when we said we'd buy land in all 50 states.
Gotcha.
So it was just such a random spot that it was the closest one to me. And that deal, I think we bought it for $2,650, sold it for $12,650. And I got eight up on Craigslist. It was just, that's one of the ways we'll post land on Craigslist for sale. And it was one of the easiest lots we've ever sold. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, well now I know a new area that I'm going to get a direct mail campaign in. And now I kind of know the numbers a little bit. Mm. So that's where I'm seeing the huge value, where the website is kind of a leader in finding new areas and picking out these deals. And it also has a lower cost per lead and per deal than direct mail for us. But then you can multiply that and magnify it when you find a really good area. Mm-hmm. And then just attack it through the direct mail. So they work really good hand in hand.
Dude, that's a really good strategy. So let me run through that again for people listening or people watching the YouTube version of this. So you have a carrot site, you launch the carrot site, and I'm looking at your carrot site right now, and you didn't customize it a ton. I mean, I'm going through there. Yeah, so you originally, before we actually had like a land seller site, you took our house seller site, adjusted it to land, it looks like. And yeah, you adjusted the form on there. So it's got APN on there, city, state, phone number, email. But the rest of it's basically the structure that we had. You adjusted some of the content, you know, to match land. Once again, this is before we had a land selling website. And were you doing any SEO, or kind of how were people finding your website? How were the sellers finding your website?
Yeah, I would say a little bit of SEO, and then just, you know, I think we toned it down. I think it's a $1 a day PPC campaign. I know it's super low, and I sent a few of the numbers just because I wanted you to see. And yeah. I pulled those real. That's our cost per click. That's our cost per lead. Mm-hmm. What it is, because, I mean, I don't really know what I'm doing on that front, truly. And then two, I don't know what's really good or bad. I don't have a lot to compare it to. But in my mind, I'm just guessing. Well, it's land. I'm getting deals. I'm buying a lot of properties through this website. It probably for the dollar amount of marketing I'm spending, I gotta assume it's looks pretty good. So,
what are those? Do you have those numbers off the top of your head again? About what are you paying per lead right now for a seller lead for pay per click?
I'd have to pull it up. I emailed it. Yeah. I don't have it up right now, but I think it was my cost per click is about 34 cents. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can probably pull that up pretty quick.
That's no biggie, man. I was just, if you had it at the top of your head, sweet. If not, no biggie.
Yeah, it's updated a little bit. I think we just bought another one that was a website deal. But I think we bought, you know, 15, you know, maybe 14 properties now through the website. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one or two, a couple a month. And it's nice. It's nice, too, like I said, using in tandem with the direct mail, because sometimes, actually, I'm doing a deal up kind of by you, and I've never even heard of the area. It's Crescent City.
Yeah, yeah.
I had never heard of Crescent City ever in my life, and this happens a lot. Del Monte County, I'd never really heard of Del Monte County before this. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's what's kind of unique is the lead will come in, and it's, where's this area? And you kind of look at it, and it's like, oh, this is a cool little beach town. It's right by the Oregon border. Mm. You know, and then, and maybe that'll be a good deal. Where all of a sudden it's like, oh, that's a good spot to mail to and to do more deals. And I know the numbers, and you can really judge it by when you post your land for sale, what kind of response do I get? Because there are lots where it's like, does anyone want this lot? Like it takes a while, or just you're not getting too much action and you can just tell like, okay, there's not a lot of demand here. Mm-hmm. And then there's other lots where you put them on a Facebook buy sell group and you get chewed up and sell it in a day. And then it's like, oh, okay, that's great. Let's do more like that. And so mm-hmm. I've really been kind of honing down my areas and locations and looking at my sweet spots so we can, you know, increase getting more properties in the areas that are the best to sell. And that's best for the buyers because people like want land. And we have a few areas where we're out and we have buyers that are like, hey, when are you going to get another lot in this area? I'm ready to go,
yep.
Which is awesome to have. But now it's like, okay, man, we got to get more in that area.
Yeah.
So kind of honing in on that is where I see us, you know, really kind of making this year special and being able to kind of really connect with our buyers more, partner up with people that are, you know, tiny home communities or storage containers or, you know, prepper these different sites where people are looking for land. And then, you know, we know people that are looking for a tiny home or looking for something too. Mm. And that way we can, I think, expand and sell, cross sell that way.
Dude, I love it. So I found the stats you sent me. And
okay.
I mean, do you mind if I share some of these?
No, you can share them all. That's fine. Yeah. Cool.
So to put this into perspective, guys and gals, so this is just the online stuff. This doesn't include what you did with direct mail. So this is just the online stuff. You had about a little over a thousand visitors from your online stuff. 303 turned into a lead. So really high conversion rate. You know, you look at that, that's almost a 30% conversion rate, or maybe over. It's over 30% conversion rate, way over. And I want to actually point that out to people because in any market, we've talked about this in the Carrot Cast before and on our webinars. In any type of market, when a market gets really hot, meaning it's a seller's market and there's a lot of other competitors to go out there and compete for that deal or that lead, what happens is your conversion rates go down, whether that's direct mail or online. And we're definitely in a highly competitive phase right now in real estate and in many, many markets where your conversion rates on a website have inched down over the past 2 years and with your direct mail. Now, a conversion rate in a San Diego motivated house seller website with pay-per-click is probably, depending on the website, if it's a Carrot site, I can tell you exactly what it is in San Diego, but nationally, it's probably anywhere between 3% and 12% conversion rate. In San Diego, it's probably more closer to 3% to 8%, 3% to 6% on a motivated house seller website with pay-per-click. We see some that are quite a bit higher because they've really built out their credibility profiles, and we've seen closer to the 3% to 5% because they haven't done anything. They need to do some work on it. This right here, guys and gals, is converting over 30%, 33% or so because there's not a lot of competition, like Gary was saying. So we start to go down to the AdWord cost. So we talk ROI here a lot at Carrot because we focus on performance. We focus on getting that high conversion rate for our clients. We do all the testing, all the performance stuff. So you guys can just do what you do best and not have to build websites and be a conversion geek and an SEO geek. But Gary's put $322 in. Small budget, right? Small budget.
Yeah.
A buck a day. Since you started it, average cost.
Okay. Sorry. I was going to say, I think when we started, I was doing like maybe for a few days or something like $10 a day.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, and we started out $10 a day. We buy land in all 50 states. And it was just like, okay, I'm all, you know, Mississippi, you know, Montana, all over the place. I'm like, okay, I got to turn this baby down because, you know, I'm just going to be spending too much time trying to like get offers together in these areas that I'm not familiar with at mm-hmm. all. And then even changing the wording a little bit where it's like, you know, trying to prep them to like, hey, you're not going to get a great offer. So it's kind of funny. It's almost like you're talking to them. It's like you want less people, but people that fit better. But yeah, so now the dollar a day is where you just kind of leave it.
That's perfect, man. Dollar a day. Anyone can do that.
I know. It's so cheap.
And then you're paying 35 cents a click. That's what your campaign is doing right now. If you look at motivated house seller side of it in a competitive market, you're probably $5 to $20 a click, you know, and of course you're going after larger deals. So it's going to be depending on the market, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 profit. So that's kind of where you make it up, but still it's a bigger budget. Average cost per lead, a little over a buck. Average cost, this is a cool one. Average cost per property purchased, $23. And with your online stuff, 14 properties purchased, your total amount that you laid out for those 14 properties was just over 17 grand. You sold those for collectively, I'm looking at this right now. So you sold those collectively for about $60,000 with cash up front and terms. So look at that ROI, guys and gals. You've got a few hundred bucks in AdWords. You've got, you know, 17,000 in purchase price. So adding the AdWords is 17.6. And then he sells it for 60. So, I mean, those numbers, it's not the $60,000 deal flip that some people are seeing in some markets, but what it is, man, this is like consistent. This is really predictable, low risk. And like you said, it's just a market that most people aren't tapping. And you've been in this really focused on it for just only about a year. And it sounds like you're going to really start to work on scaling that up a little bit this year, which is exciting.
Yeah. So that's what's so funny about the land business is, you know, I have had, you know, a little bit bigger deals. We make, you know, $10,000 or $16,000 on, mm-hmm. on a flip, but you know, typically they're smaller. And then also with the seller financing, it's a different mentality, which type of investing where you sell the property and then, you know, maybe you're waiting a few months or a little bit to get your money back and then you're cash flowing on it for a while. Mm-hmm. And at first I just kind of wanted to do the cash flow. So once I started, okay, let's do some more seller financing. You start to build that up and build up the notes, build up that monthly amount. It kind of starts to get exciting. Mm-hmm. You kind of see, okay, this is how I think a lot of people do the land business, because you do see a lot of people that they have a full-time job and then they just want to do only the cash flow. So they're only going to do seller financing and just try to build it up to a certain point. But the nice thing is because they're small deals and stuff, you can do a lot of them. So right now we're kind of like maybe 7-8 deals a month. And this year, I definitely want to flip over 100 properties. And I'm confident we'll do that. But the difference between flipping 100 and 1,000, it doesn't sound like it's really that far out there or that big of a thing. It's just, okay, we'll just build and you have your systems and stuff in place. We'll just mail more and just hire, you know, get some more VAs, get some more admin, get some more people and build them up and love on them and those things and grow. So I think that was the exciting thing for me. It's once I felt like, hey, these aren't huge deals, that it's not like a 1 or 2 deal business where you do a couple deals and know you're good. It really is about, you know, doing a lot of deals and getting and being able to turn them and build up that cash flow. But it's a really ideal business because of the simplicity to have help and to leverage your time with you know, VAs and other things, because it's not, you know, super technical, and it has a repetitive element to it, especially if you're dictating the areas that you're in and those numbers and things. So I think those things are really, really nice about it.
Dude, I love it. So I want to talk about seller acquisition and then briefly on how you sell the properties.
Yeah.
Cause I know we've talked about how you're finding the sellers quite a bit. So you're using the web. So some SEO stuff and low dollar pay-per-click. And we just read off the stats from the web. You've got direct mail campaigns going out, but like you said, they kind of work together. Cause if you get a lead like that lead you got in Crescent City and you find out that it sold great, sweet. Now you start to target a direct mail campaign in that area.
Exactly. Yeah.
And do you have kind of a rule of thumb? Are you going, you know, when you're just going to go out there and target a direct mail piece, and let's say it's Crescent City, are you pulling a list for a certain many miles outside of the city, or kind of how do you pull that list? What's your criteria?
Yeah. So what I love to do is to be able to draw a map of where I want to pull my list. So that way I'm getting the exact either subdivision or boundaries or exactly where I want to be. And, you know, I feel like the result of a good direct mailing campaign, especially in land, when you're sending out offers and stuff, it's the result of having good data and good offer pricing.
Okay.
So if you don't have a good mailing, I guarantee you that either your data or your offer pricing is off, you know? So you can tweak that a little bit, but if I, in like say Crescent City or a new area, you know, like desert areas work really well because it's just desert, and you know, you can, a price per acre works pretty well. So, you know, it, even if you have, you know, 40, 80 acre lots and then with 2.5 acre lots, it's okay, because you can kind of either just sort it by size and have a little price range, or you can just put in a quick, easy, you know, calculation to do a price per acre, mm-hmm. just do a little equation like that and copy it over. So that's what's nice. So if I think I'm going to sell, you know, a certain area that will sell these properties for $5,000 each, and then it's like, okay, well, you know, therefore I'd want to pay, say, $1,500, and then you're uploading that and sending it out. So those are kind of the numbers where I think usually to be safe, and it depends on the price, but at a low price like that, then you're going to say, I'd like to probably triple my money. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be kind of a sweet spot of still being able to get offers accepted, because, you know, there's thousands of vacant lots that are sold every year at county auctions because people stop paying taxes and just let it go back to the county after so many years. So it's not uncommon for people to just not want land and maybe even give up on it. Mm. So those offers, that's where they come in, and it's like certain people, life changes at a certain point. Hey, I could use that money more than, you know, that lot. Maybe you've tried to sell it a few times and, you know, developers aren't interested in cheap vacant land. Mm-hmm. Realtors don't want those listings. You know, for sale by owner, for someone who doesn't do that, they don't know how to, you know, record a deed, or maybe there's some liability. So it's really a niche where it's just kind of hard to sell. Mm-hmm. And that's where the funny thing is, we usually sell well below market value. Mm-hmm. So we have to buy it, you know, even under that. And so sometimes sellers get mad, but it's probably because they want more than we're even going to resell it for, mm-hmm. because it's hard to sell, you know, land at full value. And usually there's a lot more supply than demand.
Yeah. You know? Dude, you were, when we were talking last time, you were talking about a strategy that you kind of use, following, God, I can't remember his name again. The infomercial and the chips guy.
Oh, like Eric Estrada.
Yeah. Estrada.
Yeah. But the funny thing is, you see those infomercials where it used to always be at Eric Estrada, the guy from Chips, and he'd be in like Ocean Shores or California Pines or these areas selling lots. And I see it all the time where sellers will pay $20,000-$25,000 for these vacant lots in these areas that there's hype around it. There's, you know, they have all the commercial, and you come stay and play the golf course, and there's the clubhouse. And when you're buying land, a lot of times, especially a home site like that, and probably a little HOA resort community, is you're buying that dream, Trevor. You're buying, man, one day we're going to get to design and build our own vacation house, or maybe you want to move there, get to pick everything out, and it's exciting. But land's the easiest, cheapest part. I mean, they probably have financing that they're willing to do mm-hmm. on there for that land, I'm sure, to where they make it easier to buy the land. But then to actually follow through on that is where it's a lot harder to do. It's more cash intensive. And I mean, it's so much easier to just go buy a house and, you know, get an FHA loan or something than it is to go through the whole thing and buy land and developing and bringing utilities and then building. And, you know, it's so much more cash intensive and time intensive. So typically it probably doesn't get done. And then those areas, you just see people, they don't want to pay the HOA fees. They're never going to use it. Plans change. And I always joke, those are the areas, if you see those, pretty much guarantee you I can pick up those lots for $1,000.
Yep.
Because there's a lot of owners that, I mean, yeah, that's a gross, like it's not fun to buy a lot for 20 or 25 grand and sell it for $1,000. But you can claim the loss and move on. And, you know, there's, you know, maybe 0.5% of people or more that fits, you know, so it works out good because they're happy to sell it. You know, usually the sellers are appreciative and just glad, like, oh, thanks. Like, we make it really easy for them. I'll tell you how we typically close. And, you know, it's so simple. We'll find a mobile notary that's in the seller's area, and we'll send them a prepared deed and a check. The mobile notary goes and meets with the seller. The seller signs the deed. Notary hands them the check, and that's it. You know, the notary knows that's the deed to record. The seller, they don't have to bring any paperwork. All they have to do is show up with their ID and sign. So for them, it makes it so incredibly simple and easy that I love getting those emails and from sellers just saying, hey, thanks. It was so easy and painless, like, you know, and they're glad.
That's cool. And dude, that's the cool thing about it. You know, you're providing a great service that people need. Now, is it right for everyone? No, but you're providing a great service that is taking this piece of land or this burden off them, gets cash in their pocket. And it's awesome. And that way you can just really scale that up and of course focus on this amazing service you're providing. So over to the side where you're selling, you've already talked a lot about it. I'm on your Carat Land selling site right now. So one where you sell land. Yep. And, dude, you got all kinds of stuff on here. You've got some stuff, 20 acres off road by Glamis. I'm not sure where that is, but it looks like it's desert-y type stuff.
Yeah, that's here in Southern California.
Dude, $7,100. So you bought that property for $1,500, $2,000?
Yeah, $2,000.
Okay. Buildable land in Borrego Springs. 1 acre allows, five cattle or horses. One down at the bottom, golf course lot for sale, Wildwood Texas Resorts, $4,700. And, inside of here, you talked about it last time we were chatting too, where, you know, the way that you market these properties, you definitely have to stand out. You've got to tell the story. You've got to, like you mentioned, they oftentimes have this dream where the people that you're buying it from. So you've got to sell more than, hey, I've got an acre here, buy it. Dude, your listings have, just using Carat, the Carat listing tool, you've got great pictures on here. You've got the price, of course, you've got location. You know, it's really, really good copy. It's not fancy. It's just really good. And, you know, far enough away to escape the city of Tucson, Arizona, on over 1 acre of off-grid Diamond Bell Ranch Estates, yet close to the Three Points for Restaurant Shore. So you're laying out like a vision that, yeah, shoot, that's not too far. And it's got this close to it. This vacant lot is in a peaceful and rural setting of the ranch with very few neighbors around to maximize the freedom of getting away from it all. Then you go on to talk about it some more, which is awesome. Some good benefits of it. What I really like about the property is that it's rural and off-grid with a peaceful setting. And to talk about some more things, this property sold in November 2005 for over $10,000. So you're setting that value, and they're getting for half that. And then a very clear call to action. Cash price, $4,900, full purchase price, out the door. No docs, no doc fees or closing costs to purchase it. Here's your phone number, or you can join our buyers list. Then it has the lot details, the lot on a plot map. With Carat, guys and gals, if you're not a Carat customer, you can put in the address or the Google data in there, and then it pulls it up on a plot map on there so you can see it. And if it's fortunate enough to have a street view, which a lot of this land won't, but many of it does have a satellite view, you can pull it up there, which I just clicked this when I'm looking at on your site, and it's got a satellite view of it, which is kind of cool. Yeah. So dude, what else are you doing to sell properties? So you put it on your site, and then you mentioned Craigslist. Are you sending people to this listing, or what are you doing to sell them?
Yeah, so I'd say the goal is really to get people to my website, because I want them to see that, you know, we're pros. We buy and sell a lot of land. We know what we're doing. We record a lot of deeds, and that there's a component where we do business online. We send invoices and people pay us by credit card online. There's no physical. We don't meet anyone. You know, you don't get the keys. You know, it's kind of a deal where there's a lot of trust. Mm-hmm. So that's where, to me, you know, we do advertise on Craigslist. We'll do some advertising on Facebook, post land for sale and buy sell groups. There's other, you know, we're on Zillow for a lot of the properties. We sell some land on eBay. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it can be aggravating because you have a high flake rate once the auction's over. Mm. But there's some ways to, we're getting better at it, where I almost gave up and then I made a few tweaks and now it's actually decent, you know, maybe even decent. But it's nice to have multiple funnels, or like those ones in Tucson. You know, we bought 7 lots at a time, all in the same area. Mm. So you kind of want to spread those out a little bit. You don't want to put all 7 lots on your website, like, oh man, better hurry before it's gone and there's 7 of them. Yep. You know, so we'll kind of put one here, one there, a couple here, and just kind of spread those out. There's a couple other main sites like LandWatch, Atlanta Farm, Lands of America, where you can have like an account and pay $50 a month or whatever it is to post all your land for sale. But the interesting thing is, you know, we track, you know, we're all hooked up with like Dan Schwartz and Investor Fuse over there. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the beauties is your guys' websites are just so linked in with Investor Fuse and Podio. It's really nice how the leads kind of just are automatically in there all the time. Mm-hmm. And so we track where we're selling lots. And really what I noticed is it's just, we sell lots everywhere. It's not like there's one or two places where they're all the sales are coming from. Is, you know, Zillow, we got a good amount of sales on Zillow. Craigslist has been good. Facebook is a newer thing that, you know, it's, I've had a few huge winners, and you kind of learn that maybe the lower price seller financing lots are kind of what really work the best in those buy sell groups, because these people they're not thinking about buying land at all, and they're scrolling through and there's a bunch of, you know, items that you don't want to buy. You have them in your own garage kind of stuff. And then you see like, wow, vacant land, and it's really affordable and it looks cool. And, you know, with, you know, the tiny home movement and so many things going on right now, I feel like owning vacant land, it's a good time to be selling it, because I think there's some cool uses going on. You constantly see like these modular homes and, you know, helicopters dropping off these little pods, or this printer that can print a house. I mean, those things are going crazy to where I feel like it helps the land business too. But really trying to be everywhere. But your buyer's list is so key. And so, you know, we try to mail out like a deal of the week, and that's somewhere where when I look at my sales, I realize that's a good area for improvement, because these are people that keep seeing your deals. They know you're in the business. They know you're constantly getting inventory. And right now we've been on a little bit of a selling run where we've sold a lot of property lately. It's been really well. So our inventory is down a lot lower than it normally is. You know, when you have over 20 properties, it's like you feel like, hey, I got a lot to sell. And then when it gets like under 10 or 5 or 6 properties, it's like, oh my gosh, we got nothing. I can sell 10 a month if I have 6.
Yeah.
So, you know, you gotta, it doesn't take you long, but, you know, hurry up and get more kind of things. So, but those buyers they're going to learn to like you, trust you. There's not going to be any question whether or not you're genuine or you're going to do what you say you're going to do. Mm-hmm. It just comes down to, is the price and the right property a good fit for them?
Yep.
So a lot of times you initially talk to buyers and, you know, I get, is this a scam? Why is it so cheap? You know, and it's like, it's a compliment, but, you know, at the same time, it's like, well, I paid this for it, and then, oh, okay. Hmm. But you just tell them, if that's their complaint, is too cheap, it's like, okay, well, I'll go cheaper than and let you know why. But, you know, you see that, and it's like, you need it. You'll all see sales now that started 4 or 6 months ago about a lot in another state. And then we have a new property that fits and they like it and they buy it. And I've talked to them 2 or 3 times already. And, you know, so that's what I'm noticing, is that sales funnel is really, we want to make friends. We want to provide some value, maybe land tips and other things too. And then over time, once we have the right fit, you know, we're trying to communicate with our buyer, say, what do you want? What are you looking for? What price range? What do you want to use it for? And the more feedback we can get from our buyers, the buyers that do call us up and tell us, those are the ones that they get clicked hot buyer. And when we have properties that fit, you know, we're going to call them up and try to give them a good deal before we even post it.
Yeah.
So we've done deals like that where no one ever sees them, because we just work out a deal with someone we know is a good, legit buyer, and we'll close. And we have a few buyers that they flip our lots. They resell the lots they buy from us, and that's great. You know, so sometimes you got to come down a little bit extra on price, but there's times when you just want to liquidate or unload some property and it works out.
I love it, dude. I'm in the back end of your Carrot, the site where you're selling land. And dude, you've got a lot of consistent leads in there. And then our system, of course, shows where they came from, Google search or Yahoo search. And it's kind of all over the map. You've got some good Google search ones, some Google pay-per-click on these ones, I think. These are Google search.
It's all SEO ads. Yeah. On the buyer side, we don't do any ads. I'd like to do, you know, probably some more Facebook stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, those are all organic.
Yeah,
we're just searching for land, and they go on our site. So we love those.
Yeah, yeah. Most of them are Google search, a couple of Yahoos, and then some direct, which is probably Craigslist, where they copied your URL, came in, put it in there. And that's the thing, like you're talking, just having that buyer's list. You've got, you know, hundreds and hundreds on here. And so you're able to reach out to people, sell those properties quicker, which is really, really sweet. So, dude, man, there's so much more I could talk about on this, but we kind of talked about how to acquire sellers. We talked about how you're using Carrot, and the ROI you're getting there, which is something like 40,000% or something. I don't know whatever that number is. With your Carrot membership and stuff, how you're selling the properties, the psychology behind the sellers. Dude, what's next for you this year? I know you mentioned you're going to try to ramp up the business a little bit. Kind of what do you see the business looking like at the end of this year?
Yeah, so I can't wait to see it at the end of this year because I don't know. There's, I guess I just feel like compared to other things I've done, the land tweaks, you can move the needle a lot more. Mm. And so I see we'll have an in-person, you know, kind of admin sales coordinator, transaction coordinator that's really trying to replace most of the things that I do. I do use some virtual assistants, but you know, the funny thing is flipping land's a little bit of a lonely business. It's a little of a lone wolf where, you know, I don't have a lot of friends that flip land, and I've met them through, you know, different groups and things, which is great. But in like my day-to-day interaction, it's like, you know, I look around, it's just me, you know, flipping land here. So that's where having someone here to really, you know, be doing a lot of the stuff that I can just love on and pour into and train and teach them kind of everything I know and I'm doing. And then, you know, they can be managing the VAs and stuff more, where I'll really be able to free my time up more, or just focus on, hey, how do I improve? Let me dive into this and really get this going good. And I can, you know, improve the business more, that kind of saying where you're working on the business, not in the business.
Yep.
So that transition will happen. And also, you know, flipping really inexpensive land is kind of like the bottom of real estate investing. Maybe when you buy a lot for $500, there's nowhere under that, you know. Yeah. That's the bottom. But there's a lot of opportunities with owning land. You know, buying land and running utilities and having a tiny home park to create massive cash flow a month, renting those spaces out and providing a cool tiny home park where there's not many of those at all right now. But I think they're really popular, and affordable living in San Diego or Southern California, it's outrageous. Mm-hmm. So that would fit a big need. You know, possibly getting into the billboard game.
Yep.
That's high on my list of back burner. So the thing about land is I feel like I've really only scratched the surface. I haven't been in it that long. I have a lot of room for improvement, and I don't want to be too quick, which is one of my characteristics, to kind of like move on to something. I mean, this is working and I can make it so much better that I've done, you know, maybe for one of the first times, a good job of pushing back on those back burner activities. You know, I have like this billboard course in the wrapper, and it's like, you know, why would I spend time reading about that when I can grow this business? It's already turning and going well. So I just, it's not as much of a temptation. And, you know, really the lifestyle, that's what I want. I want to, you know, want to coach the kids' teams and volunteer or do stuff. I don't want to, you know, be able to control my time like that. And with flipping land, you don't really have clients. You don't really have any demand for your time. It's all virtual. We went on a huge family vacation up to Truckee, like Lake Tahoe area, just like last week.
Cool.
And we were up there, Trevor, for 9 days. And it was the longest family vacation, you know, we've taken, period. And I have, you know, a flaw where I get kind of anxious and stuff on vacation, because when you're an owner-operator, one-man show too much, you know, where even if you have help, you're still a little bottleneck in your business, to where if I'm not doing stuff, you know, things aren't happening. It either makes it harder to enjoy, or you just kind of feel a little bit stressed or things. Mm-hmm. And this was such a cool vacation because, you know, we were playing in the snow. It was just dumping snow. We had tons of snow at the cabin. You know, we were having a good time. And I was selling lots. And I think during that 9 days, I sold 5 lots. And, like, you know, like, got paid while I was at the cabin, you know, like, email invoice, and, like, they paid.
That's cool.
And it was so nice. And I was just like, let's stay another week. You know, it was just, you're having fun, and didn't have that feeling. So that's where land is really nice, because I feel like, hey, I can live anywhere, you can go anywhere, and you could operate it. And, you know, for me, you know, my kids are my greatest joy. And to where I don't want to be missing out on so many things, and they're still young, to where it's great. And, like, you know, they want to help out, have them make little videos, and it's fun. So I think, to me, when you say by the end of the year, I think by then I'll have it. I'll have something in place where it feels like a little bit more of a real business,
yep.
And we have real help, and, you know, I can go on vacation and not even have to be the one to send the email while I'm on vacation and have deals happen. So that's kind of where I'm looking to be.
Dude, that vision right there is like, that's where it's at. You know, that's why a lot of us become entrepreneurs, so we can add value. We can build a business that serves our lives where we're not always serving the business. But you're having fun. It's something that you see potential for growth. You know, it's not something where like, man, I'm just locked into this thing. You see potential for growth. And
the nice thing about the sales is when the seller financing, it has that compounding effect. There, it's not as fun right after the sale because you don't get all the money.
Yeah.
You just get a down payment, you know. But now I'm getting paid for lots I sold months ago.
Mm-hmm.
So then as it starts to build and you know, just to kind of – we haven't been doing the seller financing too much. But right now I think we're at about maybe just like $2,200 a month.
Yeah.
Got about maybe $90,000 in notes or somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not hard to envision that being $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 a month, mm-hmm. because, you know, the ROI is so high for land that you're buying that cheap. And, you know, typically on seller finance deals, you're going to get 100% or more a year,
mm-hmm.
you know? Mm-hmm. So that's where, you know, when I talk about kind of freeing up that time too, that seller finance is a big part of it, because if you're not doing that, then you just got to get the next deal to get paid every time.
Mm-hmm.
But if you unplug and it's like, well, I got $90,000 coming over the next, you know, 4 years, or, you know, it's not forever money. It's not a rental. That's why a billboard's attractive, because there's more longevity, but it does have a 4 or 5 year cycle typically. And it's not, you know, we've been great at, you know, not really foreclosing and everyone's paying and it's been really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But if that happens, it's not really a big deal, and you typically just resell it and would end up even making more. So, but that seller financing piece, it's nice to get paid for previous sales, and it kind of raises the floor of your business to where, as you keep getting that monthly up and up and up and up, it just, you can go to the beach more and play golf and go sailing and,
yeah.
you know, do the things that I really love to do, even though I think I love working. I love my business. I love to stay up till midnight or 1, 2 in the morning on it. But, you know, I'd rather be at the beach or sailing with my dad right now. That's the truth, of course, you know, so.
Yeah, man, I'm so happy for you and on this past year and the growth you've had. And I'm really looking forward to the growth this next year. And everyone who's listening to this or watching the YouTube video version of it, kind of put yourself in that situation that where Gary had to make that decision. If you're in that spot right now in your life and business, figure out what that decision is. If you're going to stick with your current path and just implement something new, or just put your head down and stick it through, awesome. Maybe that's what you need to do. Maybe you haven't stuck it through long enough. If you want to pivot to go the path of least resistance like Gary did into land, sweet. Do it, but hit it hard and implement it really, really well, and don't look back. Just do something so when you're looking back at the end of this year, guys and gals, that your life is better than when you're listening to this podcast now. And Gary, I just really appreciate you sharing your story. Dude, you unpacked your whole business model here, which is really cool. And I really appreciate you coming on here and being vulnerable enough to do that. Because a lot of people, they're not abundance mindset, you know, based, and they just like hold everything in. They think, man, if I share this, it's going to take away from me. But what usually happens is you share it, man, it ends up magnifying or amplifying yours, which is really cool. So appreciate the time sharing this. And I'm going to throw at you a question, which is a completely shameless plug here. But, dude, for you on the carrot side, I know there are a lot of other choices that you could have chosen to launch your web side of your business. You could have chosen WordPress or setting up your own site, one of those cheaper free website builders, one of our competitors. Why did you choose Carrot, and what has Carrot meant to your business up to this point?
Yeah, so I'd say I did try a self WordPress side or a few things that, you know, they just didn't really work. And I think for me is it came a point where it wasn't about what I was going to pay. You know, I just wanted something. I wanted the value. I wanted it to work and to not be a lot for me to set up, to not be a thing. And I think sometimes you think, oh, I want a cool looking website or certain stuff. And it's like, I don't know if that's depends on what your goal is, but for a lead site, I mean, I want someone to go to the site that wants to sell land, and the only option is just to put in their APN number and their email, because there's nothing else there to do. Mm-hmm. Ish. I mean, I have a few other things, but that's where, you know, it just worked. So I think you guys had a good reputation. I have other friends or new people that were using you guys. And so there was, you know, that kind of third party endorsement stuff. Mm-hmm. And then also I think going with Podio with Investor Fuse and just how seamless those connected. So it was like at the same time where I was like, all right, let's ramp this up. Mm-hmm. We're getting Investor Fuse. We're getting On Carrot. Like, let's go. And the syncing was great. I think I was like getting domain names while, you know, the guys in Investor Fuse are asking, you know, hey, what's your domain for this? And then seeing them later. So it was really the same time. And that was the key, that integration and just the fact that it worked. And I could pretty easily tweak things. I mean, I took all the sites and said that houses. Yeah. You want to buy your house. I mean, it was all house, everything. And had to go through and change it to land or property or things. But it was easy to do, and it still kept all the functionality. Mm-hmm. And then on the back end, as far as just SEO and putting your keyword and those things, and you kind of have the indicator, I'd say it's fairly user-friendly, and it just works, you know. Mm-hmm. So now for me, it's like, you know, those leads just keep stacking up and stuff. It's like, well, I don't know what other people are doing. I have talked to a few other people, because websites are not a common way for people to get land whatsoever. Mm. And they're like, yeah, I got like a couple leads. It doesn't really work. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, you know.
Yeah, it's not working for me either. So they don't try it.
So, I mean, I think bottom line is they produce results, you know. And you had a good reputation. And, you know, I thank you for that, because both, you know, the website where I sell land and get leads, both of you guys. I have a new one coming up with you guys where I'm tweaking it. This is going to be just focused on getting good lots here in San Diego. Mm. I'll be working with kind of builders and stuff on those. And it's nice though, because I know that I can sort through it. And really, the crazy thing is, if that was all you guys did, it would still be a good value. Mm. But that's like, it doesn't even, it feels like that's just like a little thing you do, and then you have this huge other just plethora of information and podcasts and videos and training and so much to help your users and customers that, you know, it's, I wish I could delve into that even more. Mm-hmm. And it still is a great value work. So I feel like you guys have an incredible backing and are so well connected that, you know, it's been great. There's things where I was running out of media space, because I was loading so many pictures and stuff on there, and Alex like, okay, you're all good. Oh, okay, thanks. You know, like, can I buy more or whatever? He's like, no, you're fine.
Yep.
So every experience has been good, and you can just tell you guys are so well connected. And if there's new tweaks or new algorithms, mm-hmm. or new things come up, it's like, you know, you're in a good spot. So,
dude, we're rolling out all kinds of new stuff. We've got our SEO keyword ranking tracking tool that's already working in our system. We're going to be rolling out to you guys as customers to track your rankings in Google better, and a bunch of other stuff coming out, dude. So I'm excited about rolling that stuff out for you guys. And I really appreciate, you know, what you had to say there, 'cause it really validates all the work that we're doing, and also the stuff that we're not doing good. We want to hear that feedback so we can make it better. But Gary, really appreciate the time, dude. Everyone listen to this. Go and implement something in your business. If it's land investing, sweet. Go and implement what you heard in this call, because this call could basically be your roadmap to do it. Go and launch a website if that's going to be part of your business. If Carrot's the website, sweet. We'd love to work with you. If not, no big deal. We've got all kinds of free information online that can help you make your online marketing more effective. But just go do something. And you mentioned billboard stuff. The episode that we rolled out literally this week, at the time we're recording it, with my buddy Jason Duff. He's a big billboard guy and a big real estate investor out of Ohio. He's my age, 34, and he has hundreds, I mean, 500-600 billboard faces in Ohio. So that'd be a great podcast episode to possibly listen to. We don't really talk billboards a ton. We more talk about him. He's buying up the entire downtown and renovating it in his area. But yeah, go listen to other episodes of the Carrot Cast, guys and gals, and take action. Chase that dream, build that business like Gary mentioned that just serves you, and just love what you do. Gary, thanks for the call, man.
Awesome. Thanks, Trevor.
Thank you.